Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it is another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark. It's good to be with you.
Good to be with you once again and continuing our rousing discussion of IRAs and estate planning, a lot of people's main asset besides their home, if they are lucky to own a home, is their IRA. And there's lots of changes in IRA law. We started this series last time and continuing that today.
Right. And we're specifically focusing in on what does it mean for someone to inherit an IRA. And so when I say IRA, what I mean is any tax-deferred account. So that could be a 403B. It could be a 401k. It can even be a Roth IRA.
Okay.
And so all of these combined is what I mean by an IRA. So I'm using a general term. I'm not trying to be overly specific to the different types of tax-deferred accounts that there are. Mm-hmm. But these all play when someone passes away. So when the account holder dies, then we need to move these assets, this account, regardless of the specific title, to a beneficiary. And we align beneficiaries in multiple ways. So they go to spouses, they go to other beneficiaries such as children or charities even, and they can also go to a trust. So what I want to look at today is what happens when someone inherits an IRA. Now, we established a little bit that in our last show, and you can go to legacyandfaith.com and take a listen to last week's show. We're kind of building on top of that, which is that there is a new law as of 2020 that has now come into play. And instead of having lifetime stretch, so the old law was if an inheritor received an IRA, they could take little by little for the rest of their life.
Hmm.
It's called a required minimum distribution. So an inherited IRA would have an RMD. Doesn't matter what your age is. And so if a 40-year-old inherits an inherited IRA, they would have to start their RMDs immediately. Now, that's contrary to if you build your own IRA, right? So you have to wait until 59 and a half. And there's other rules. You have to start taking RMDs by 72. I think it's now 73 this year. So those are different rules when you create the IRA.
Your own.
Uh-huh. Right, right. Mm-hmm. When you're the one who puts into it. Mm-hmm. But if you inherit one, the old law was you get to inherit it and you take little by little. Well, Congress decided
they want that money.
Yeah, we don't like having the little by little approach. Right. We want a greater tax benefit. We want money faster from those accounts. So we introduced in 2020 a 10-year rule. So now an IRA, most inherited IRAs must unwind within 10 years. And that's really what I want to focus on and look at the inheritor's obligations of the inherited IRA. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to take a kind of a technical look here for just specifically the first part of this before break.
Okay.
All right. So we've established that there's a 10-year rule. Last week, I gave exceptions to that. Minors, disabled beneficiaries, spouses are the most common one. There's others as well. If a spouse takes an inherited IRA, they have multiple choices. They can – most of the time what happens is a spouse is named as a beneficiary. So what that means is that the spouse is going to be able to roll it over into their own account. So they would take it into their own IRA. And all the same rules as if they earned the money themselves instead of their deceased spouse would apply. So if they're not under the rules to take RMDs yet, so they would have to wait and all these other rules. Now, so we're going to talk about what happens if someone other than a spouse receives an IRA. Maybe a listener out there has unfortunately gone through losing someone that they love. And they've received an IRA as a part of the inheritance, and they've kept it in an inherited IRA account. So what that account would actually look like is if I died, the account would literally say Paul Grant IRA. So it stays in my name even though I just died. Then it goes to my daughter, Rebecca. So it would say
she was the beneficiary on the documents.
That's right, because mm-hmm. she's the beneficiary. Mm-hmm. And it would say Rebecca Grant, the beneficiary. So it's weird. It stays in my name. Okay, mm-hmm. so maybe a listener out there has an inherited IRA. Mm-hmm. And if that person, if the decedent died in 2020 or over the past 3.5 years, these are the rules now that are in play. So number one is that the law technically says that the inheritor must take an RMD just like the old law did. Now, here's the confusing part, which is that because of the new law, there was a misunderstanding or there was not clarity in the new law, and many people interpreted the law as saying, I don't have to take any required minimum distributions for the 10 years that I'm going to keep it. So in this discussion, let's assume a couple things. Number one, someone died in 2020 or later. Number two, the inheritor is under the new 10-year rule. Okay, so let's make those two assumptions, which means that within 10 years, they must liquidate the entire account, okay? And many—
But they could do it at the 10-year mark.
They could wait all the way to the 10-year mark, yeah. Or they could have, like most beneficiaries, already unwound the whole thing and taken the whole thing. So,
which is what most people do.
Unfortunately, a majority, mm-hmm. so well over 50%, would take the entire amount. Why? Because they got a little bit of a windfall, mm-hmm. and now they want to pay off debts and they want to pay this. So number one is that when an inheritor takes any money from that inherited IRA, that is going to be taxable income to the beneficiary. So if you take money, be careful, because next year you're going to have a tax bill. It's going to add to your income. So let's say you make $75,000 and now you took $25,000 from your inherited IRA. You didn't wipe it all out, but you took $25,000. That means that $25,000 is going to be added to your earned income. You've made $100,000. You got to be careful because there is going to be an increase mm-hmm. in your tax liability the next year. Some inheritors cash it all out. Let's say it's a smaller IRA. There's $50,000. They go, oh, well, that's not much money. I can spend that really quick. So they cash it all out. And they do exactly what they're really good at, which is they spend the whole thing. And then the next April, their CPA gives them some really bad news, which is, by the way, you owe
$10,000.
Yep, that's right. At 20%, you owe a pretty decent amount of tax. And they go, oh my gosh, all that money is spent and I don't have $10,000. Okay, bad scenario. So unfortunately, when IRAs have a beneficiary, there's very few voices that are directing that beneficiary to the consequences or to even the options of holding that money and really understanding what needs to be done. So an unwitting beneficiary may cash it out and no one's giving them guidance and they have to pay a big tax bill. And boy, that's a bad scenario. Now, for years, they could be under the IRS thumb because they don't have enough money to pay their tax bill. Now, we've got interest, we've got potential penalties, and the list goes on. Mm. So, unfortunately, what I see is that there's not a lot of good education, hence why I'm trying to bring this to listeners, concerning inherited IRAs. Now, let's say that a beneficiary over the past several years has not utilize their inherited IRA, they've wanted to hold it. Now, the law says that they're supposed to be taking RMDs every year. And there's two different rules. I'll get into it in just a second. However, over the past years, including this year in 2024, there is an IRS notice that has been issued to clarify the confusion, which is the confusion was, do I have to take any RMDs? And the consensus or the confusion was, no, probably not. So you could wait all 10 years and take it right at the very end. In year number 10, you could pay a bigger tax at that point. Well, that is not accurate. So the IRS has said that an inherited IRA must take required minimum distributions. But because of the confusion, we are going to waive that requirement for 2020, 2021, 22, 23, and also 24. Now, this year's regulation that came out in 2024 at the very beginning of the year said, but beginning in 2025, we're going to require it now. Okay, so there may be some misinformation to beneficiaries who have received an inheritance over the past 3 or 4 years that they don't ever have to take an RMD. That is not accurate. It's simply that the IRS has waived that requirement over the past years. So I don't want current beneficiaries to be lulled to sleep. You're going to have to take these RMDs beginning in 2025. So number one, be careful if you are an inheritor that you understand the full law.
What is the minimum then? If you have to take a minimum.
Yeah.
So it's what, a percentage or?
So great question. So that, again, before we're going to come to a break quickly and then we're going to get out of this technical space. So hang on here. So the RMDs. If someone was already taking required minimum distributions, then the law says that an individual must take at least as rapidly the same amount. So unfortunately, we look at the decedent and we say, what would have they been required to take? And we have to take it at least as rapidly as the decedent. So if they were already required to take RMDs, we continue to use whatever they would have been required to take as a part of the equation. Now, what if they were not taking RMDs? Then we default to the old rule, which was, it's called a single life table. You look at your age and what would have you been required to take under the old law? Because remember, this new law is built on top of the old. So we have to go to an IRS table and we have to calculate how much you have at the end, on December 31st based upon your age. And that tells us next year's required minimum distribution. Or if the decedent was required to take it, we're going to look at what their age would have been and the account value on December 31st. We're going to do a mathematical equation, and then we're going to set out what the next year's required minimum distribution is. So there's two different rules in the new law based upon the decedent and whether or not they were already taking it. So technically, the law says that it must be at least as rapidly as what the decedent was taking it. So we look at them. If they didn't take it, then we look at the inheritor, and there's a different table that we use there. Both of these have tables. If you use a financial advisor, they would be able to assist you. But unfortunately, what I've seen is that advisors look at whatever is happening this year only, and they may not be aware that the law is that you have to take RMDs, but the law has been held that it's been excused or forgiven at this point in time. So in 2025, if you're a current inheritor of a IRA and you have an inherited IRA, so then you are going to start being required to take it in 2025. Many advisors are not aware that is going to happen, and they may not be planning proper income consequences based upon the actual law versus the forgiveness of the law this year. So this, that is going to end. So there are some of the technicalities. Let's get into some other issues after break.
Yeah, pretty complicated. Lots of variables there, and we want to consider everything. And Paul is definitely doing that this week in this discussion of IRAs and estate planning. You like the way he thinks? You want to know more about his services? How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Yeah, legacyandfaith.com. That's our website. Head over there, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts. There's upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. And continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Legacy and Faith Show this week, looking at IRAs and how they work with estate planning. Paul got into some pretty technical stuff there.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's okay.
It's riveting radio, isn't it, when I get into
Well, it's
tax
interesting because if people have inherited, a lot of times they inherit IRAs and they need to know what to do with them. You're talking a lot how individuals use this in their estate planning. What happens when the IRA goes to an estate? So the estate is the beneficiary of an IRA. How does that work?
Yeah, now you're really getting into my bailiwick, so thank you for that. So we're getting to estates. And that could also mean, what does it mean if a trust is the beneficiary? But those are very different things. So there is a rule that if it defaults to the estate, so let's say that someone did not put a beneficiary on an IRA, then it defaults to the estate. It's very rare that someone intentionally leaves an IRA to their estate. You could. You could say, as the beneficiary, the estate of Paul Grant. And so then it would default to my estate. I don't know if in my career I've ever seen someone actually intentionally do that. How it defaults to the estate is if someone forgot to put a beneficiary. They go, oh, I have a new account with – I have a new 401k with an employer, as an example. And I'm going to put a beneficiary, but you don't do it when you open the account. And I'm going to get back to that. One of those I'm going to get back to it scenarios. Then they never get back to it and they forget. So then they die and it – and now there's no beneficiary. We talked last week that sometimes the contract will rescue you. If the contract of the account holder, such as Schwab or Fidelity, Vanguard, Edward Jones, and the list goes on and on of different type of financial institutions. Even if you use a financial advisor and they're an individual advisor, they're not connected to one of those bigger institutions, there's always someone in the background who holds the account. So when you create that account, you sign a contract, and maybe their contract is, hey, if you're married, we'll give it to a spouse. If you have kids, we'll give it to your kids. And if you don't have either of those, then we'll let it go to your estate. So sometimes the institution and the contract that you've signed with them actually has beneficiary assignments if you forgot to name a beneficiary. Okay. And what they're trying to do, it's nice of them, they're trying to rescue you from it actually going to the estate, from defaulting to the estate. And the reason
What's wrong with that?
The reason why is because instead of the 10-year rule, you're under a 5-year rule.
Mm.
Okay, so now you have to eliminate the IRA within 5 years instead of within 10 years. Or if you're married, your spouse could have taken it and rolled it over to themselves, no time frame other than whatever they are required to do because of their age. So then there's no immediate taxation if it's to a spouse. So they're trying to rescue wayward account holders so that it can be placed into a better hand than just the estate itself. So the estate would then be under a five-year rule. You have to unwind it within 5 years. And that's unfortunate. As a matter of fact, that's where the confusion from before our break, I told you there was IRS confusion, because in that five-year rule, you actually don't have to take RMDs. You just have to fully unwind it. So there's specific nuances. Again, like you said, it is kind of complicated when you get into the nitty-gritty of these different laws. But we don't want it to default to an estate. So it has to be unwound in 5 years, and that's kind of the worst-case scenario. So what happens then if we leave it to a trust? Well, most trusts that I've reviewed, unfortunately, do not have proper IRA language in them. So what that means is that if we look at a trust and it doesn't have proper language, then it's going to be treated like an estate. So then we're in a five-year rule, and we have to unwind it within 5 years. Why do we not want to unwind it in 5 years? Why do we want 10, or why do we want the lifetime stretch if we can get it? It's because the taxes have to come out faster. So if there is a $100,000 IRA and I took 20-20-20 over 5 years, or $100,000 in one fell swoop, that tax burden to the beneficiary is different than if I had $100,000 and I was able to take it $10,000 per year over the 10-year stretch. So the taxes come out faster in a default estate rule, or if a beneficiary just takes it, versus the 10-year versus the stretch. So if I am 50 years old and I qualify for the lifetime stretch on $100,000, well, I'm probably only having to take like $2,000 or less over the course, maybe even $1,000. Well, that's very little tax burden to me. So we want as much stretch as possible. So in a trust, when the trust is a beneficiary, again, unfortunately, most trusts are not properly designed. Not all trusts are equal. You just don't need a trust. You need the right type of trust to ensure that your estate plan is going to work properly. So it's not about having an instrument. It's not about having a will. It's not about having a trust. It's about ensuring that the instrument you choose to use, a will, a revocable living trust, irrevocable trust, that they are properly designed to match whatever your vision is for your family, for your beneficiaries, for charities. So the language inside of that instrument is critical. And the only way you really know if you have the proper language is to have another attorney who does this on a regular basis review it and ensure that indeed the language is proper and it's meeting your current expectations. So whether you have a five-year-old plan, a 10-year-old, a 20-year-old plan, those need to be consistently reviewed. Why? Because the law constantly changes. The IRA law changed 4 years ago. Well, I just updated all of my language for all of my clients for the IRA language because there's a wait-and-see approach and we get better notice from the IRS. We see what they're going to do. So everything is constantly being updated within my system. And if you don't have a long-term relationship with an estate planner, if you don't have any type of a relationship, you just got a document, then that document begins to wear down almost immediately. Not because the attorney did a bad job. That might also be true, unfortunately. Right. If they didn't put the right IRA language in it, then it may not be able to take an IRA and hold it, thereby it would be under a five-year rule. So unfortunately, many trusts do have improper language. They're not properly designed. And so therefore, getting it reviewed and getting it reviewed consistently should be a part of your thought process. Documents wear down. Documents get old because laws change, taxes change. And oh, by the way, so have you. Your family has changed. Your finances have changed. Everything is moving in this thing we called life. And so a stagnant document cannot keep up with those changes. And unfortunately, what I've seen with trusts is that there is missing language, unfortunately, more times than not. As a matter of fact, I would probably say, in trying to give a really good balanced approach to what I've reviewed, I'd say 15%, no more than 20% of all trusts I've ever reviewed have proper IRA language, which means that you can't get it into the trust. Why would you want it into a trust? Because what if there's other rules? So if you have younger beneficiaries, there's ways to protect that younger beneficiary. What if you have minor beneficiaries? Then that minor beneficiary wouldn't have to go to a probate court. It would stay inside the trust. Why would we want it to go to a trust? Because when it's properly designed, a beneficiary can have nice protections against future divorces or bankruptcies or other creditors. So there's very strong reasons of why having an IRA go to a trust could be a proper decision. Mm. But if the trust is not properly designed, then we may have a default to an estate, which means that the taxes are going to be sped up. That could be an unfortunate ramification of having an out-of-date or poorly designed estate plan. Mm. So having it reviewed, making sure that it is up to date. And what does that mean? In all honesty, every 3 to 5 years. Every 3 to 5 years, your estate planner, you should be knocking on their door. They should be knocking on your door to say, come back. But they rarely do. Hmm. So therefore, that's why I've developed an entire relationship program in my system. We need to review these things. I would love for you to reach out and let us help you with this issue.
You need that properly designed estate plan, and Paul is the man to do it for you. How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
IRAs and estate planning. We'll continue this discussion next time on the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.